Everyone has a story. Everyone travels a road. Some of those roads are paved, some are gravel, some are a combination. Some are superhighways. Some of us have met with sharp turns, intersections, and delays. We travel at different speeds to different destinations. On this podcast, we talk about your road to now.
Welcome to Your Road to Now. Today I have the pleasure to sit down with Eric Tremonde. I get that right?
Nailed it.
Nice. Awesome. Eric was in town speaking at our first Level Up event this past Wednesday, and he was just absolutely amazing. And I asked him to sit down with me, and he's like the biggest celebrity I've ever had sit down with me so far. So a little intimidating, so we'll see if we can get this going, though. Eric, if you could just start off and tell us a little bit about yourself, kind of give us like a brief rundown.
Sure. Yeah. Eric Tremonde, happy to be here in Kelowna, looking at this beautiful view from Now Media, Czech Creative. And how I got here, I guess, my life in 30 seconds, is we started a company about a half decade ago that quantified workplace culture. We put numbers behind the employee experience so that companies could better attract and retain the right talent for them. Things went great. I wrote a book that we call Rethink Work, and have been speaking sort of around the world ever since. So I've done about 270 events to date, and have had an absolute blast seeing the world and connecting with great people along the way.
That's an amazing way to get out and see the world, right? To kind of experience different things all the time.
You know, it's it takes you to the places you'd least expect. Last year, I got to speak at a Formula One racetrack in Madrid for AAA.
Wow.
And, you know, I never thought I would be there before. And then you get to, you know, a great place like Kelowna. And, you know, I grew up in Cranbrook, BC, so I'm a small town BC kid anyways. And so anytime I get a chance to come home or to be in the province, I absolutely love it to be able to be a part of events like the one that you hosted last night and to connect with people from the communities and the cities that I grew up in.
So, born in Cranbrook?
That's right.
Yeah. Born in Cranbrook there. Not too many people admit to that, I guess.
Hey, I'm proud of it. I love it. My family, my mom and my dad are still there. My grandparents are still there. And I wouldn't trade it for the world.
It's a beautiful city, for
you know,
sure.
It is. The most common line I get as I travel around, Cranbrook, oh yeah, I drove through there once, yeah. You know. But I grew up in the mountains, grew up playing hockey, grew up on the lakes, and, you know, it's even still a great place to go home to.
So the Kootenai Ice were there when you were kind of growing
2002
up?
2002 Memorial Cup champions, don't forget it. They aren't there anymore for those who are in the know, but, it was a great team to grow up with and to share some success with, that's for sure.
I think my last memory of Cranbrook was riding through on a motorcycle. We went on a ride with
there
a bunch
it is,
of people.
Riding through again.
Riding through. Riding through, but we stopped because there was just like, oh my God, there's a Mr. Mike's.
Yeah.
Mr. Mike's back in the day was a big deal.
Yeah.
And there's very few of them left, and Cranbrook has one of them. So
uh-huh.
I think there's a rebirth of those, I think.
There is a rebirth. Things are going well for the brand. At that time, I think what I loved about that Mr. Mike's is the salad bar. And that was like one of a kind.
Usually you got full with a salad bar and then you were okay
that's right.
The steak was kind of not so great.
Yeah.
So you grew up there, did high school there?
Yeah, Mount Baker alumni. And right from there, there was a fork in the road. I had a few options, UBC, UBCO, University of Calgary, et cetera, a couple others. And I ended up going to the University of Calgary. 4 hours from home, you know, when I'm driving, it was a great option. I loved my experience at the University of Calgary, and then settled over to Vancouver after that.
So you shared that video last night, the Red Bull thing, which is a cool story of the Red Bull. We won't get into that whole thing. People
sure.
can see if they can ask you for that, or
sure.
maybe we'll show some of that. But you were working for the university after university?
Yeah, so the way that it worked is, as I sort of worked my way through school, academia was not my strong suit. I was, you know, just over a 2.0 for the first couple of years, nearly on that sort of dean's vacation, and I realized that my strength, after doing that soul-searching trip to Australia, my strength was more in the social side of the university experience rather than the academic side. And you might think that's kind of odd, being at a university. But I found that when I diversified where I spent my time, I actually did better in school. So I joined the business clubs, I joined the case competitions, I joined the various events and networking things. And then I ended up being elected or running in the election for the student union in my final year of school. So the student union is at the University of Calgary. It's an $18 million organization responsible for the fees, the activities, and the events of 25,000 students. So we had, I think it was 10 business units. We had restaurants, we had student support centers, we had a whole myriad of things. And it was at that time we got approached to be a part of this European journey that Red Bull was hosting. And the 30-second story is that the challenge was that where there were 100 teams from 40 different countries that were tasked with getting from London to Berlin in 7 days without the use of cell phones, technology, communication, money, credit cards, anything at all. And the idea was that you'd be given 24 Red Bull at the start line and you'd have to trade your way across.
So 24 each though, or?
24 per team. Oh. And if you made it to a certain point in the continent, which is ridiculous, they'd give you another 24 Red Bull and you could use that to trade. Long story short, we ended up making it through lots of speed bumps and roadblocks along the way, sometimes literally, sometimes figuratively. And that sort of was a great way to put a cap on my university experience.
That gave you a lot of confidence too, I imagine, to kind of interact with people.
Yeah, look, that was entrepreneurship and business at its finest. We like to think that business is accounting or it is marketing or it is human resources. And it is all of those things, don't get me wrong. But it's the ability, I think, first and foremost, from an entrepreneurial perspective, to build. Mm-hmm. To get somewhere that you haven't been before or to sell something that hasn't been sold before. And in that case, it was us. It was our movement across a continent we'd never been to before. And so, you know, coming back from that trip, we thought, hey, look, if we can do that, if we can travel 3,412 kilometers, trading 96 cans of Red Bull, visiting 6 different countries, using 13 modes of transportation in 7 days, using, you know, going across a continent we'd never been to before, speaking languages, well, we didn't speak them, but through countries that had languages that we didn't speak, you know, maybe we can sell a product, maybe we can build something. And so the appetite and, truthfully, awareness for entrepreneurship was born from that trip.
What a springboard, eh? You the know, confidence
it was,
builder.
It really was, because we felt limitless. And I mean, naive is, I think, the close brother or sister to limitless. But it was that, you're right, that springboard that suggested, oh, we can sell X, no problem. We did this. And I think had we not done that trip, entrepreneurship, as I knew it, wouldn't have been the avenue that it took.
We're all salespeople. Lots of people try to deny that, oh, I'm not a salesperson. But we sell ourselves every day when you're trying to enter a relationship with, mm-hmm. you know, your significant other. You're selling yourself because, yep. you know, you see if they're buying or not. Yep. But, I mean, when you're trying to negotiate something with anybody, you're selling. And you started as a salesperson as a youngster when you said, hey, Mom, can I do this?
So true.
And she's like, no. And you're just like, well, these are the reasons I want to do it. So you're selling, right? Just, and once you kind of admit that you're a salesperson, then you can kind of like embrace it as opposed to hide from it, right?
So yeah, and you know, to your point, nothing's changed. You know, I'm not doing the consulting anymore. I'm focused on the speaking side of things. But what I've realized the speaking business is nothing more than market positioning and understanding who that target is. Mm-hmm. And speaking just as a business is incredible. It's a $4 billion business every year in North America, 375,000 events, 66,000 speakers. There are more events that happen in Texas than Canada.
That's a crazy stat.
That's crazy. And 70% of the events happen on the eastern seaboard of the United States. And so, you know, the truth is, you don't, in this business, my mentor always likes to say, everyone tells you not to put all your eggs in one basket. And speaking is very much the opposite. You just stack it as high as you possibly can, because it's the only way you can really stand out.
And I think it's kind of like the perfect time for this. That industry you're in is because I think the CEOs have become like the rock stars, the sports stars of today. Like, you know, you think of guys like Jobs and Bezos and Elon Musk. And I mean, everybody knows those names. They're household names. Lots of times you didn't know back in 1980, you wouldn't know who the the CEO of, you know, GM was, and GM was the largest corporation in the world. But, yeah. you know, that was kind of like not really, you know, in the focus, but these guys are in the out there all the time. And then you get guys like, you know, yourself and Gary Vaynerchuk and, mm-hmm. well, there's too many to name, but I mean, I think the cool thing is, and kind of what we try to do with Level Up is, when you try to reach success or what your version of success is, who better to ask than people who've been to the mountaintop?
Sure.
Ask them the path, because that'll be a shortcut for you. That maybe you don't have to do all the mistakes that everybody has to do, and they can impart some knowledge on you, because knowledge is power.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the stuff you shared last night was extremely powerful, and I took a lot of really good notes from it. And I think anything we can do to take away from that and bring that back into our companies, our cultures, and then pass that into the employees so that they feel empowered, because, you know, like old guys like me sometimes have to give way to the to the young people and allow them to be the best version of themselves. And I heard that, and that's something that I've always said. Our job is to find out what you're really good at and then give you the tools and the support to become the best version of that.
You know, I really like that you say the best version of yourself, because in this culture space, we always like to talk about best managed companies, best places to work, best environment, most sustainable, all of these things, and don't get me wrong, are great. And for anyone who's on those lists, a sincere congratulations, because it takes a lot of work to get there. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, I was looking at the Fortune best places to work in America, and the best place to work in America, employee rated, is Hilton Hotel Chain. The second best place to work is Salesforce. Now, Salesforce is a tech company out of San Francisco. Here's the thing. There are not that many people that would want to work at Salesforce that currently work at Hilton. And there are not that many people that want to work at Hilton that currently work at Salesforce. And so what that tells me is that both Hilton and Salesforce have built incredible organizations that their people love. But that doesn't mean that it's best for everyone. And so as we're looking even at relationships or education or that next job or building our company, what I think is most important that we do first to understand what best for us is. Like, what does success look like? I mean, so many of us grow up living our lives thinking that we're supposed to do this. we're supposed to go to university. We're supposed to get a car. We're supposed to get a house. We're supposed to get married. We're supposed to have two kids. We're supposed to have a white picket fence. Then we're supposed to do this, that, and the other thing. And hey, you know, like you said, the world is changing. Sometimes CEOs are superheroes now, and sometimes they're the absolute opposite. But knowing that there is no best that we have to follow, no subscription service to live our lives, that I think that really is quite liberating to say, hey, success for me looks totally different than it does for you, and I can go chase it. And you can too, and we can support each other along the way.
I think success is a funny word for lots of people. And it is. Success is different for everybody, and you have to find out what that means to you. And to me, I kind of boil it down to this. Success for me would be doing the stuff, what I want to do, when I want to do it, without being forced to do it. You know, being able to have that flexibility to do what I want to do. I think that's what success is. It's not in your bank account. That's not in your thing. It's being able to do stuff you want to do, because that gives you kind of purpose and passion and stuff like that. And I think that's what's important. And I never compete with anybody out there. I try to compete with myself. I try to be better every day. Sure. And I think that's even in our company, we don't typically look out and see what, you know, somebody else is doing. We try to just be a better version of ourselves tomorrow.
Yeah.
Learn from today and kind of apply that and try to be better tomorrow.
Well, it's funny you say that, because when you compete against other people, even in industry, you're still comparing apples to oranges, because, you know, another company might be remote or flex, and you might be said, no, we're 9-to-5. Might have totally different demographics, different value sets, and happen to just produce a similar-ish product. But to suggest that Google should be competing against Facebook is wildly inaccurate, because it means that we don't really understand who Google or Facebook are. So this idea of competition and comparison doesn't work for me, that's for sure, because I often do that too, wrongfully. I compare myself to other speakers who are in my culture or workplace space, and I think, oh, he or she or they are doing so great, until I realize that, wait a second, actually, I don't want to live in Los Angeles or San Francisco like they do. And I think that's some of the downfall with some of the CEO transparency that we see. We'll see these articles that say, you know, six things Elon Musk does before breakfast, or five habits of highly successful people. And I read some of these things and I'm thinking, I don't want to do any of those things. And so I think that really calls for a recalibration or a redefinition of what it means to be successful. And your definition, I couldn't agree with more.
I think, yeah, you have to find what makes you happy for sure. And I think there's another thing from last night I remember was that behind the wall, and it's behind the Instagram post, behind sure, the, sure. behind yeah. the, and just like you're saying for Elon Musk and that, behind that, there's other stuff you don't see. So they're showing you the shiny bauble and everybody's like, oh my God, how do I have that? But behind the wall, you don't see the stuff that goes in behind it, right? Yeah. And some of the stuff behind the wall is great. Some of the stuff, maybe not so great, but you know, like even, and I'm going to jump to sports a little bit, like people see that moment where the person scores the goal or whatever, wins Memorial Cup or whatever it was for Cranbrook and that. Yeah. They don't see the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours that player would have put in prior to that. And most of them don't want to do that piece, right? So that's the tough part of Behind the Wall. I think that's a great title for your new book, Behind the Wall.
You know, here's something I'll say about that, though, because speaking is the epitome of that example. What you see is the hour on stage where, hey, I've been practicing for weeks for this, maybe. You know, we were just talking in the car last night. Beyonce will wear heels on the treadmill before doing a Super Bowl present or a Super Bowl performance or something like that, just to get into it, to get comfortable, and to get ready. But what I've realized, and the studies now show, that even if we're working and living in our passion, there are still 30% of the things that we do in the day that we don't necessarily like to or want to do. And so, don't get me wrong, our passions will still beat us up, often. And when we fall in love with that process rather than the outcome, that's when I think we can find sustained happiness and fulfillment. Because it's not just the stages that I look for, or the goals in the Memorial Cup, or that like slam dunk, you know, Kawhi Leonard bouncing off the rim against the 76ers in the second round of the playoffs last year. It's the time in between. It's the time in the practice courts when nobody's watching that you can fall in love with the art and the creativity and just the process. Because when we can do that, you know, it's the time in between that I think ultimately makes champions as successful as they are and allow us to live that resistance free, or at least to the highest degree possible, life that we can live.
Praise the process.
That's it.
And I think that's a big thing for people, and some people aren't willing to put in the work, and not much good comes from not putting in the work. You can get lucky. You can get hit by lightning, or you can go to the casino every now and then, or you can win a lottery ticket, but most success comes from hard work.
It's funny you say the term the work, because I think the work, which is where all of the success's secrets lie, is the thing that we understand the least. And one thing I like to say is that sometimes the long way is the shortcut. Because if we keep trying to take shortcuts and lefts and rights, and we should just be putting the work in, we find that getting to where we want to go takes a lot longer. And so if we can put the work in, I truly believe that's the fastest way that we can get to wherever it is we want to go next.
One of the other things that really resonated with me last night when you were talking was, what's really great was the willingness to share information without trying to upsell. And I love that, because typically on Instagram and all this stuff, you're going to see guys that are just like, look at my Lambo, look at this and this whack of cash. And just like, you too can be rich. Just send me
$29. Sure, sure.
And then if you do send the $29, they're going to upsell you continually, because it's just like the next secret's behind the next door. And you keep unlocking doors with cash, of course, right? Because that cash they're wafting there is yours, right? So, and I liked what you said is like, hey, all my stuff is online. I'm willing to share it. I'm not selling you anything. Just come and, you know, and partake in the knowledge, right? Yeah. And then you become an authority in what you do, right? Which is great.
Well, look, I mean, like I said, going back to some of, I would say those people who are selling the products and things like that, don't get me wrong, there are opportunities and times and places for all of that. And sometimes that's exactly what somebody's looking for. But when I look at the life that I want to live right now, you know, and we had this conversation too, I'm living in Vancouver. I don't believe that Vancouver is necessarily the best place to build a business. I definitely know it's not the best place to commute from, but I think that it's the best place to live. It's certainly not the most affordable, but I've chosen the priorities that are most important to me. And to me, that's a seawall, a sunset in the west. And so I'm always west coast over east coast for that reason. And for me, it's the simple things that make me the happiest. And so as soon as we can identify which priorities for us are highest and kind of forget the rest, that, you know, I think that we can ultimately get it. I believe that we can. But I think we have to understand ourselves well enough first to be able to prioritize those things so that we can go get them. For me, the product development and the consulting is not where I wanted to spend most of my time. My co-founder loves it, and he's so good at it. But you know, I don't mind taking 100 flights a year. I don't mind going to the far corners of the earth to share my message and go from there. And like you said, share the knowledge along the way. Give the worksheets for free. If anyone wants worksheets, let me know. You can have them for free, no problem.
And I'll just add to your point about Vancouver. I haven't been to as many countries as you probably, but I've been to a few, and I believe Canada is one of the best countries in the world. Jean Chrétien said it at the last Level Up too. We need more Canadas around the globe. And I think for that, for our social safety net and our caring and our culture and our melting pot and all that stuff makes Canada one of the greatest countries in the world. And, you know, it's one of the second largest landmass. It's, you know, like it's got rugged, raw beauty. And I think if we say Canada is one of the best countries in the world, I would say British Columbia, I could argue, is the best province because mm-hmm. of its raw, rugged beauty and all the stuff mm-hmm. she has. And then if I had to pick a place in British Columbia, I would pick Vancouver, Victoria, or Kelowna.
Yeah.
And I think anybody that gets to live in those spots, Vancouver typically makes them the top lists in the world as yeah. one of the most beautiful cities. It is a beautiful city. Mm-hmm. It has its problems because of traffic, and of it's course. Got like really shitty infrastructure getting yeah. in and out of it. Yeah. But like if you could be lucky enough to live downtown and work in a similar space downtown and not have to do the rush hour, I think Vancouver's the place to be. And I think, you know, it's awesome. And I think Kelowna's great for that kind of that small town feel with big city amenities.
Yeah, and that's just it. I mean, Vancouver is going to be great for a lot of people. I love it. Wouldn't trade it for anything. And it's going to be the worst for others too. Mm-hmm. And it's so funny that where we live and how we work and who we date or marry is, you know, it's the same conversation. When we can understand ourselves first and what it is that we want out of our lives, then, you know, everything starts to emerge from how we want to work, where we want to work, who we want to spend our time with, where we want to live. I don't think a lot of us do enough of the work to understand truly what works for us. Again, we go back to that we're supposed to sort of model. I'm supposed to do this, then supposed to do this. Hey, you know what? Maybe you're not supposed to do any of that stuff. Maybe we're supposed to find out what works for us and double down on that.
You really seem at home on the stage. Like you really, like you have a lot of charisma. You really put it out there, and it's fun to watch someone that's really passionate and delivering. It doesn't look like work for you. It looks like it just comes out. So, and I don't know how much work goes in, like how many hours of practice, but it looks great. When did you decide that that's what you wanted to do? Did you kind of fall into the first one, or like what was your, like tell us about your first speaking where you actually got paid?
Yeah, happily, I was six, and I was a magician at the time, and I was at a family reunion, and I charged all of my family members, yes, I charged all of my family members a dime to attend my magic show, 3 tricks, 6 minutes.
So it started early then.
It started early, and the truth is I loved performance. You know, I realized that being a magician, I didn't have the patience to put the work in to be a magician, so that was gone. I then picked up guitar and loved playing guitar. And Kurt Cobain was going to be my guy. I didn't know Kurt Cobain's story, so when I told my mom, she put an end to that real quick. You don't want to be Kurt Cobain. I understood a few years later why not. But you know, I started writing music, started playing for my school, my grad class, for weddings, and I loved performance. But you know, my voice from a singing perspective wasn't that great. So then I sort of put that to rest. And speaking at the time was on the radar, but I thought you had to be old, white hair, having built, sold, run a business, whether it be consulting or entrepreneurship or otherwise, to be able to take a stage, to share your wisdom. I didn't know about the industry of speaking, which was, you know, even at that time, far less than it was today. And then I took the job at the student union. You know, I was addressing 300 or 400 or 500, maybe 600 or 700 students at a time. And then I was thinking, wow, this is really fun. And I would keep going off script to my staff's total horror and just started, you know, riffing a little bit and having more fun with it. My ability to memorize isn't as strong as my ability to flow is. And then we got into the consulting side of things, working with big clients across the country. And they wanted us to come do town halls or AGMs or industry association presentations. And I'm thinking, hey, this is really, I really enjoy this performance aspect of speaking. And so I thought, hey, you know what? Maybe I don't have to wait until I've built and sold businesses. Maybe this can be a part of the model. And so I started speaking to generate business based on what we found with the clients that we worked on, and really enjoyed it. So doubled down on that. And here we are, a bunch of years and a bunch of stages later, still loving it more than I ever have before, and really starting to see the work pay off, and people respond accordingly. So it's been great.
That's awesome. So what's the road ahead for you? So what do you want to see? And is there a plan? Do you have a 3-year, 5-year, 10-year plan? Or
I talk a lot in my keynotes about this idea of a 1-degree shift and the importance of what I call reducing friction. And just the quick framework for those listening, I've got 5 questions that I sort of live by right now. And the first is, where is there friction? The second is, what am I supposed to do about it? We'll run through a quick example. The third is, where is that going wrong? The fourth is, where is it really going wrong? Because I find that we lie to ourselves a lot. And the fifth is, what's the smallest viable change I can make about it? So let's just say, for example, I wanted a promotion at work. Where is there friction? I'm not happy in my role. I deserve that promotion. So what am I supposed to do about it? Go talk to my manager and see if I can get that promotion. Well, he or she didn't respond well. So where is that going wrong? Maybe I'm not talking to the right person. Where is that really going wrong? Well, maybe I just haven't put enough work in and proven that I deserve that promotion. So what's the smallest viable change? Well, I might pick up an extra task right now or do a little bit of extra work to start to put myself ahead of the 4 other people that also want that promotion. And so as I look to the future, I've got my goalposts, sure, that are 1, 3, 5 years out, but I do not have those things buried in concrete. I do not have a strong foundation set for where I want to go next, because this conversation that we have today could enlighten me or make me aware of something that I didn't know existed yesterday. You know, I think the biggest problem with a 5-year goal is the lesson that we choose to ignore 2 months into it, because that wasn't part of the plan. And so, look, I love this path. There's a new book on the horizon. There's new stages. There's new relationships. There's new consulting opportunities. But look, what I'm trying to do right now is to reduce friction. And where that friction is going to be reduced first is by reviewing the tape from last night. It's going to be transcribing the whole thing, and it's going to be line by line going through that to see, okay, what stuck based on audience reaction, what didn't, how did that flow, and if I can continue to reduce friction 60 minutes, or in our case last night, maybe 75 or 80 minutes at a time, that I think will get me to where I want to go next, but it will also open me up to the most opportunities and give myself the most time to do it. I mean, you said it even in this office, which is absolutely beautiful. Some of our creatives need that time and space to be creative. And I think all of us need that time and space to be able to be aware of and open to whatever doors life presents along the way. And so if we get too stuck in those 5 or 10 year goals, I think we're blinded to the opportunities that are right in front of us often if we're not open or give ourselves the time to do it. So many of us are busy, we're checking phones, we're checking emails, we're doing so many things that I think, again, we're supposed to, I put in air quotes, that we miss what's right in front of us. So to answer your question in short form, what's next for me? More of the same, but the ability and the opportunity to be open to whatever comes my way, because I'll tell you, I'm having a lot of fun right now. And excited for whatever's next, and not assuming that I know any of it.
Well, it was a pleasure having you on stage. That was great. It was a great way for us to kick off Level Up 2020. Our team is completely stoked. I mean, even the feedback, Nikki's email usually blows up, and it had blown up last night. And I think Karen had already gotten a ton of stuff back from people, just like, oh my God, amazing, and stuff like that. So that for us is amazing, because we're trying to do good for the community. We're trying to provide tools and stuff that people can come and learn to make Kelowna a better community, because strong businesses build strong communities, because the businesses put the people into the communities that build, buy the houses, buy the trucks, and build families, right?
Let's talk about that real quick, and I know we're probably running out of time here, but one thing that I've realized, and this is not intended to be patronizing or condescending in any way, but a realization that I had that is absolutely trivial and simple, is that businesses, yes, build a community, sure. But businesses are no more than a collection of teams, which are no more than a collection of people. And I think that the people then, if we look at that sort of circle diagram, the people are the community. So I think that when we actually blur the lines between business and community and recognize that people build business and community, that we have the potential to build whatever we want, so long as we're aligned in how we want to do it. And I think that that's the responsibility of leaders and business, is to ensure that we can get the most out of the people that are building both the teams, the business, and the community. I think that's the beauty of what we have the opportunity, and I would argue the responsibility to do in 2020 and moving forward, is recognizing that people now at work have the opportunity to do the things they want to do, not the things that they have to do. And as a result, the community that we can build both in and outside the office is second to none and like we've never seen before.
It's awesome. I love that. The full circle. The we'll end with quickfire, which I typically do.
Okay.
Typically do. This is like 12 or 13 in, so
okay. Yeah.
The tradition. And you're not from Kelowna, so we're going to try and do this a little bit different. So okay. We like to talk about, like, if somebody's going to Vancouver, where do they got to go to eat?
Oh, man. It depends. If you like sushi, I like a good Miku or Minami is awesome. I'm a huge sushi fan, multiple times a week, embarrassingly. If you want something like a cheap, quick, I love Peaceful as a guilty treat. If you want to be down by the water, I like Lyft or Cardero. And it's a great spot. Lots of great places to eat.
And then you shared, I think you live close to the seawall.
Yep.
Is that one of your favorite activities if you're there to run that seawall?
Yeah. I think I was out on the seawall 130 times last year.
Wow.
Yeah.
I know it's beautiful. Like if you get a chance and if you haven't been to the seawall, you have to do it. Yeah. So it's free. It's free and it's fun. And it's beautiful. Yeah. Like it's epic actually. It kind of really puts Canada into perspective too, or Vancouver. Yeah. I thank you for your time.
Hey, thank you for what you do. And for those who are listening and you want to get involved, come. Look, I've got no connection to it. I'm out of here, back to Vancouver in 10 minutes. But I truly believe that it's events like Level Up that help bring a community together. It's not just the speakers and the people at the front of the room that you learn from. What I think the real beauty of an event like Level Up is, not that the speakers aren't phenomenal, because they are, is that it's the connections that you make when you're at the networking break in between. And it's the lingering that happens after the event where you can share your personal experiences and how you related to the speakers that allow communities like Kelowna to be even better. And so come to Level Up in April, in June, in October. The links I'm sure will be at the bottom because they're events that truly are worth 10 times what your ticket price is going to be, because it's not just the information that you get, which is great. It's the connections that you build and the community that happens as a result. So thank you for the work that you're doing, for making these events happen, and for building the community that you're building.
Yeah, most of the accolades belong to our team, which is great, and I think they do an amazing job, and very proud of them. And I want to ask you for something that I'm going to ask you here so that it kind of puts some pressure on you. I want to be able to share that video that you did, the Red Bull one. I'd love you.
Yeah, of course.
So I'll put that in the link, or in the article that I do with the podcast and that, and you're gonna laugh your head off when you see that video. It's absolutely amazing. So again, thank you again, Eric.
Great. Thanks so much.
And bye now.
Bye-bye.
If you'd like to be part of this podcast, we'd love to share your story and your road to now.